Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with LearnVisualStudio.net. In this lesson, we're going to dive deep into the code that we wrote in the previous lesson to make sure we really understand the HTML that we're writing. And to that end, make sure that you've downloaded the code that's associated with this lesson. It's available from wherever you're currently streaming the video or wherever you originally downloaded the video file from. Inside of that zip file, there should be a folder called Lesson 04. Inside of that folder, there should be a test.html page, which we'll use in just a moment, and then a before folder. And the before folder is merely a snapshot of where we left off from in the previous lesson. So you'll see the lesson03.html page, the styles.css page, and then a couple of image files. And so what we want to do is open up the lesson03.html file in Notepad. There are many different techniques. Use the technique you're most comfortable with. For me, I'm going to right-click and select Open with Notepad. And so ultimately, you should see on your screen what I'm looking at on my screen, okay? So in lesson two, we worked together to add HTML5 tags to an existing document in order to give it structure. And then in lesson three, we applied styles to our HTML5 document using cascading style sheets. And I hope by now you have clear in your mind the difference between HTML5 and CSS. HTML5 is for structuring the content. CSS3 is for styling the content. So we have two concerns here, and we're keeping them separated. Content and presentation, content structure, and styling information. We keep them separated, and there are some big benefits to keeping the style sheet information separated out, even separated out into its own file, the biggest of which is that we can apply those styles to many web pages in the same website or in many different websites. So sure, you could mix the styling information directly in with your HTML, and you'll see many pages on the internet do this. You'll see that even I will use this technique a couple of times just to show you how it's done. But you'll quickly see that you should never take this tactic whenever you're building real web pages, because it'll make it difficult to reuse those styles in the future. Furthermore, there's a larger philosophical issue here as well regarding semantic purity, and we'll talk about semantic purity later in this video. Okay, so let's dive into the HTML5 page that we're looking at right here that we created in Lesson 2 and 3. I want to explain why we did what we did, and I want to start at the very top and work my way down. So first of all, we have this doc type, angle brackets, exclamation mark, doc type in all caps, and then lowercase HTML. Looks very official, right? But what is it doing? Well, it's simply an instruction to the web browser explaining which set of rules that it should use to interpret this, or rather parse this document. Each version of HTML has a different set of rules, and those rules are set out in, ideally, a specification. In Lesson 3, I showed you an HTML5 validator. Remember the validator.nu? We used it to ensure that we were following the rules of HTML5 in our document. And remember, we weren't. It found a couple of mistakes, and we fixed those. It used the doc type declaration to determine which set of rules that it should check our document against. So this HTML5 doc type is pretty simple to remember. For contrast's sake, take a look at what the doc type from a previous version of HTML, XHTML 1.0 strict. It looks something like this, as you see on screen. XHTML 1.0 strict essentially treated your web page as an XML document. Now, I'm tempted here to go off into a long explanation of what XML is and the history of how XHTML 2.0 died in favor of HTML5, but for the sake of brevity, just know that there's an interesting backstory about how HTML5 came about in the first place. And keeping that in mind, let's go ahead and just keep moving forward here with the important stuff. So compared to XHTML 1.0 strict in general, HTML5 is really laid back. In fact, if we open up validator.nu, and we were to go to this validator input and set that to text field, and it gives you this little template here, let's delete everything out of it except just the title and the doc type, like so. And if you click validate, that's all that's required in order to get this markup to validate as a valid HTML5 document, okay? That's pretty crazy. So I guess the moral of the story is that HTML5 is extremely forgiving. In fact, the absence of hard and fast rules or syntax styling rules was one of the design goals of HTML5 in the first place, to not break the web. If it already is working in today's web browsers, well, allow it to keep on working. Don't do anything that would break existing web pages if you can help from it. So the practical result is that HTML5 is a very forgiving declarative language. It accepts many different syntax styles. And as an instructor, I would merely say, find a syntax style that works for you and stick with it. Now, what exactly do I mean by the words syntax style? Well, up to this point, I've only used one syntax style, the one that I'm most comfortable with. But ultimately, there are many different ways that you can write HTML5. For example, you can choose to use all cap letters or all lowercase letters whenever you're defining tags. Most people are going to use the lowercase, but I've seen it done both ways. Previous versions of XHTML required to use all uppercase, for example. Then there's the difference of how you set values to the attributes inside of given tags. For example, if I were to, on this div tag, set the class equal to important, I can choose to use double quotes around the word important or choose not to. I still recommend you use the double quotes around it. You can choose to use self-enclosing tags or to omit the enclosing tags. So in the case of a cell defined within a table, and we'll talk about that much later, you can choose to define cells just as a open close angle bracket td, or you can include the closing slash td in order to define one specific cell. It's up to you. Again, most people, I think, if they're coming from a background in writing HTML, are more comfortable with including the enclosing tags. There's also the notion of self-enclosing tags. You can see there's a br or a line break. You can either write it without the self-enclosing tag. In other words, at the very end, you see how there's a space slash angle bracket. That's just another style. You can choose either styles. They both represent the same thing. So it's really up to you. Now, if you go out on the internet, you search around, you're going to find heated debates about which style is the best. I'm going to leave it up to you. Pick one and stick with it. You can choose the one that I use, which is very close to what you might see in previous versions of HTML, just because that's where I'm comfortable, what I'm comfortable with. Okay, so let's shut this down. Let's get back to this document. And at a high level, whenever we were creating the tags around our document, we started off by declaring an HTML tag. It sits almost at the very top, and it's closed at the very bottom. Furthermore, inside of that HTML, or children to that HTML tag, there were two major sections. There's this head section. So here's an open head and a closed head. And then there's this body. And then at the very end, or almost at the end, you can see where the body tag is closed. All right, so an HTML tag can include a head section and a body section. All right, these define the major boundaries of an HTML page. Now, you might find it interesting that even these are not required in HTML5. You can still create a valid HTML5 document without these, like we saw just a moment ago. Web browsers will actually do you a favor, I guess, and insert the HTML head and body tags in as the browser is going through and parsing your document, no matter whether you declare them or not. And just to demonstrate that, here we have this test.html page. If we were to open it up and look at it in Notepad, you can see that it's very simple. We've just included the word hello world inside the title, and I've added a paragraph hello world in the body. If you were to open it up in Internet Explorer by double clicking it, it's a very simple web page. What's interesting about this is if we were to go to the options over here on the right and select F12 developer tools, and then make sure that the HTML tab is selected here in the F12 developer tools, it shows you kind of an outline for the document as it parsed through it, interpreted it, and as it begins to render it. And so this is how Internet Explorer sees our document. Notice that it inserted an HTML, a head, and a body. And we can drill in and see that the head owns a title, and the title owns the word hello world, which we see on our tab. And then the body owns a paragraph, which has the word hello world, like we see right here. And even as we select it, it puts a little line or a little box around it, okay? So the moral of the story here again is that even if you don't insert these yourself, the web browser will typically add them for you. Now, we can just skip the HTML, the head, and the body tags, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we should leave them out. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. I think there's a couple of reasons why I'd recommend that you explicitly continue to add the HTML, the head, and the body tags even in your HTML5 pages. And the first reason is because we're really in a transitional phase right now. Some people know HTML5, but I'm guessing the majority of people out there aren't familiar with it just yet. So to avoid confusion, keeping these main structural elements in place might actually be good for people who are trying to understand your web page and as they continue to make changes to it or work on it in some capacity. Furthermore, there are some helpful attributes that can be added to these tags to perform some helpful tasks. So take, for example, our HTML tag at the very top. I've added an attribute called lang for language, and I've set that equal to the letters EN for English. It's there to help search engines or other tools like speech synthesizers, spelling or grammar checkers, or help the browser select the correct font glyph for a given language. So do you have to use lang equals EN? No, not necessarily. However, it's considered by some people to be a best practice. And therefore, to use it, we have to include the HTML tag here as we define our web page. So to summarize, I'd recommend you continue to use HTML head and body tags, even though you and I really know that we don't need to add them. It's still considered a good practice, okay? Okay, so as I said a moment ago, an HTML document has two parts, the head and the body. The head contains information about the body of the document. The body contains the HTML that will be parsed and then ultimately displayed by the web browser. The head can contain a bunch of different things. Now we've seen here that it contains the title and it contains a link to our style sheet, but it can also contain a meta tag. The head is pretty flexible, in fact. It can contain entire style sheet definitions, JavaScript or links to external JavaScript files, and multiple meta tags. So first, let's start with this meta tag at the very top. This particular meta tag deals with the char set. So meta char set equals UTF-8. So what are meta tags exactly? Well, the term meta is used often in information technology. It merely means extra information that adds context about something. Okay, in this case, meta tags in HTML add context to the HTML document. So then, what is the char set and why is it set to UTF-8? And what context does that give to our HTML document in this specific case? Well, unfortunately, this is a pretty complicated topic. Again, I'm tempted to go off into a really detailed explanation because I find it fascinating personally. But let me merely direct you to this article for more information. It was written by the owner of a company called Fog Creek Software. Here, let's turn this off. And his name is Joel Spolsky, and he wrote an article called "The Absolute Minimum Every Software Developer Absolutely, Positively Must Know About Unicode and Char Sets. No Excuses." All right, so at any rate, most professional web developers recommend that you include the char set declaration. At a minimum, you should at least understand what it is and why it's important to have it there and what the history of it is. And this is one article that would help you determine that. They also recommend that you make sure that you're saving your documents using UTF-8 and that your server is set up to serve UTF-8. So as we saw in Notepad already, whenever we're saving as, we want to make sure to set the encoding to UTF-8. As far as the server is concerned, each individual software, whether it's Internet Information Services on Windows-based servers or Apache on Linux-based servers, you just have to make sure that the server is set up to correctly serve UTF-8 documents. Ultimately, if your international users ever report seeing these weird characters in their web pages, like black diamonds that have a question mark, a white question mark in the middle, you may have to investigate this further and see what's wrong with either your declaration, the way you've saved your web page, or the way that your server is set up to serve out those types of files. Okay, so what other types of meta tags could be added instead of or in addition to the char set UTF-8? Well, take a look on screen. I've got a couple of examples here. We have a description, a keywords, an author, a revised, and then also a refresh. And so some of these are used purely for SEO purposes. For example, description just allows you to explain the purpose of this given web page. Same thing with keywords, what keywords are closely aligned to this web page, so that if somebody's searching for it, the given search bot, engine bot, might use this to help determine your ranking. There's also information about who originally authored the web page, the last time the document was modified in any way. And then there's this HTTP equiv equals refresh content equals 60. Basically, this just says that the information on this web page could change potentially often. And so, like a news website, for example, and so you should continue, the browser should take that as a cue to refresh the web page automatically every 60 seconds. Okay. So next up, we have the title. We've already talked about this. The title is simply the text that you want displayed in the web browser's title bar or in the tab, the tab's title area. Okay. Then we have this link, and we've talked about it already in the previous lesson. It was fairly simple to understand. All the attributes of the link element are basically rel, which is the relationship. So what is the relationship of this link document to this document? In this case, the relationship is that it's a style sheet. Secondly, the href is where you can find this style sheet or this external file. Then there's the type. What type should we interpret this file as? It's a text/CSS file, right? And there are some very specific types that are available to you to use here. And then finally, there's this notion of media equals screen, and we'll talk about this much later whenever we're talking about building responsive web pages, all right? So when you think of the head section, think simply additional information about the document, even referenced inside of the document, but not necessarily displayed within the browser itself, all right? All right, so next up is the body, and you can see that takes up the lion's share of our file. And I'm tempted to talk about the body tag and what goes on inside of it. However, we're going to be spending really the next 7 video lessons on this topic. So let me just talk about the goings-on of the body tag at kind of a higher level. I've used up to this point the term semantics or the term semantic meaning a couple of times so far in this video series. Simply put, when I use the term semantics in relation to HTML5, I'm talking about the implied meaning of a part of the HTML document so that a machine, or I suppose even a human reading the code, could interpret the subject matter going on inside of those HTML tags, okay? So the hope is that by being one of the first generation of web developers to mark up our web pages using these rich semantic tags, we're laying the groundwork for developers to add semantically smart software to interpret our web pages. So for example, search engine spiders or screen readers for the visually impaired, and maybe other ideas that in 2012 I can't conceive of, but the next generation of developers have this rich foundation to build on top of and be able to extract pieces and parts out of the documents that we mark up in this manner. So, for example, by adding a nav tag to our web page, a visually impaired person could theoretically go directly to that part of the web page using a special key on their keyboard and more easily navigate our entire website. Or a search engine bot could skip all of the design chrome around of a web page and go directly to the main articles or sections of the web page more accurately. And these are just some of the examples, again, that we can conceive of today. Over time, it's possible that by embracing the notion of adding semantics or meaning to our web pages, it'll pay off in a big way long term. I'm going to have more to say about this as we continue through the series, but for now, when you hear me say semantic meaning, you'll know everything that I'm implying by that. Okay? All right, so let's move on and talk about HTML5 browser support. So HTML5 is relatively new, right? So it stands to reason that older web browsers are unaware of the newer tags that have been added to HTML5. This is why I want to work with Internet Explorer 9.0 or greater in this series of videos. Still, we know that it takes time for people to upgrade their web browsers, and some people may never upgrade. So what are you going to do about that as a web developer? Should you avoid HTML5 altogether and only code HTML 1.0? Well, all I'm going to say is that in this series, we're going to talk about HTML5 and CSS3. The number of issues and workarounds that you could employ to try and make HTML5 and CSS3 effects work inside of older browsers could easily make up a series of lessons on its own, and I'm going to leave that to somebody who's much more knowledgeable and talented than I am in that area. I would just say that if you're learning HTML today and you don't have a deadline in the near future for a project that has to work on every single web browser ever created from the beginning of time, then please focus on HTML version 5. The world will catch up with HTML5 eventually, and you'll be positioned well at that point. And frankly, most browsers will ignore tags that they don't recognize. So usually, even if you look at an HTML5 page in an older web browser, it's still going to look probably okay. It may not always look nice, but it'll usually render at least to some extent. Okay? If you really, really, really want to know how to make the new HTML5 tags work in older web browsers, then you might want to do a quick search on the internet for a JavaScript file called HTML5 shim that brings many HTML5 features to older web browsers. Okay. Furthermore, you might want to learn more about the notion of progressive enhancements. It's a style of building websites that begins with keeping older web browsers in mind during web development and then progressively enhancing, but not requiring, new features like those in HTML5 for the page to render properly. So if the user happens to be using a newer web browser, then great, it'll all work and they're going to be able to take benefit from the enhanced features that you've added in. But if they don't have a newer web browser, then they can still count on the page to render itself and to be useful to them in some way. And Wikipedia is a great starting spot for learning more about the notion of progressive enhancement. There are other features of HTML5 that we're not going to talk about in this series. So in this series, we're going to be spending most of our time talking about semantic tags. We're going to spend time with the new tags that allow you to create forms to collect information from users and a lot more. Then at the very end of the series, I'm going to briefly talk about the HTML5 canvas, SVG, or in other words, scalable vector graphics, and then also embedding video using HTML5. And there are some other features that allow developers to do cool stuff like create offline applications or to save data in a browser-based database and a lot more. However, I'm not going to be covering those in this series. I'm also not going to be covering some CSS level 3 improvements like CSS 3 transitions, which allow you to animate portions of your web page. So when you use that in conjunction with the HTML5 canvas and a little bit of JavaScript, you could conceivably create simple games that replace Flash or Silverlight plugin content. CSS3 animation and HTML5 and JavaScript involves advanced techniques and concepts and could easily earn a video series of its own, and these are definitely areas that you can pursue after you complete the series. All right, so HTML5 features are being added all the time with each new release of all the popular web browsers. If you're curious about an HTML5 feature and you want to check on each browser's current support of that feature, then you can check out this website. I've actually created a bookmark for it here. It's called caniuse.com, and you can search for a particular feature of CSS or HTML5, and it'll tell you, for example, what's supported by each given web browser and which version, okay? Now, if you're curious about the single best resource for learning everything there is to know about HTML5, there's a few places you could look. First of all, there's a version of the HTML5 specification that's intended for use by those who are creating web browsers. You might see the term user agents. That simply means web browser or some tool on the client that can interpret a web page, okay? But the version of the specification that I would recommend and refer you to is intended for web authors or rather web developers like you and me. And so let's take a look at that. And let's go to... Yes. So the URL might change. It's currently, as I record this video, www.w3.org/tr/html5-author/. Okay. And this is called the HTML5 edition for web authors. I'll be using draft version 29. However, there might be a newer version by the time that you begin watching this video series. I anticipate that there are very few differences between what I'm looking at and what you're looking at. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But I'm going to be using this website often, and I'm going to be calling your attention to select passages as we go throughout this series. All right, so you might want to bookmark this or somehow get to it very quickly because we're going to be using it often. Okay, so let's go ahead and stop right there. We're off to a great start. Now we're going to start getting deeper into the details of HTML5 beginning in the next lesson, so we'll see you there. Thank you. Mm-hmm.